Welcome in to this week at Missouri Politics midweek update. But downtown Jeff City from a very tired state capitol. I think was it 3 last night? Same legislative day though, but it's a heck of a day, beautiful day in the state capitol. Gonna be a great Labor Day weekend. Thank a guy that works for a living, not the stuff I do, but like actually real stuff. Got the Stein here from Charlie and Warrington. Thank you so much. Clydesdale's there eating. It's nice while we get let everybody get in. I don't know what you're having for lunch today, but I'm going to enjoy some Harris pizza. I'm a fan of the Hercules all day long. You can go extra cheese. You can not. It's up to you. Mmm. That is good. Mmm. I like a good, juicy pizza. The Hercules has all the meat. And no vegetables. Harris pizza, classic, capital tradition. It's outstanding. You'd love it. Check it out. When you come to the capital, hit Harris, you're going to love it. All right, we got our house pin on here. We're going to talk some PQ. Let's start back. This is a long story. How to get here? There's about 20 reasons. And let me give you my white trash hillbilly, West Butler County, Stein and Island. Let me get a good drink here before we get started. So back in the day, you had Democrats that guns and abortion, their national party was leaving them on. Missourians never had left. So they did tough on crime stuff. African Americans bear the brunt of this. Go a few generations, conservatives get elected who always have more laws to pass. There's not a conservative I've ever met that didn't want to put you in jail for longer. Actually, that's changing a little bit. But for the most part, they all have more laws. They're going to be conservative right after my law passes. And so what you saw was black people bore the brunt of this. There was a lot of resentment already there. And kind of culminates, the reformers come in, and they're going to help transparency, right? So what happens is, in 2016, you had Eric Greitens used a bunch of outstate money to defeat a former prosecutor in Chris Koch. You had Kim Gardner get a bunch of outstate money to defeat a former prosecutor in Mary Pat Carl. I guess they broke prosecutors at the time for their jobs. Kim Gardner runs on, I'm going to prosecute police, not so much people that break the law. And keep in mind, while that sounds insane to me, crazy, may sound insane to you, to a lot of folks, her message hit very well. She won by a lot. Now, Republicans run on guns and abortion, law and order. That may sound insane to some of you. If you're in the cities, you're a particularly liberal person, but they win by a lot. Governor quits. She charged him with a crime. That makes her a little more known. Her stance with police, bad. She has the relationship with police that you would expect someone to have who runs a campaign on, I'm going to prosecute police. It's not good. It's bad. And so she becomes one more. Then a couple things happen. That governor quits. A former sheriff takes over from the governor that quit. Tough on crime. The national mood is tough on crime. There's protests that have went. They've not went on since Ferguson, but they've always been under the surface when they weren't on the streets. The murder of George Floyd brought that right back up. And so the national Republicans run on law and order. A former sheriff is running on law and order. Probably the best issue in the suburbs where the swing voters are, law and order. And Kim Gardner's there. And Kim Gardner knows what she was doing. Charging the McCloskeys, she knew what she was doing. Does anybody think the McCloskeys weren't clownish to be out there? If you don't think they look clownish out there in their pink shirt and Uzi, you probably are the clown. If you think they deserve to be charged with a crime, you are probably the clown. But of course, everybody today, there's no middle ground. Everybody has to be as crazy as they can, play your role. Kim charges them. Makes herself even a bigger target. Parson answers the question. Yeah, I barred him. Sounds reasonable to me. Sets the stage. Now, here's what happened. This is what started last night. You're going to hear in the Capitol lots of complaints about the governor's staff work on this. You're only going to find people that will publicly, when they're trying to shine somebody, compliment that right now. That's not a good place. That's just the truth. Observers that are big, that you hear it most amongst his biggest supporters because they think maybe he could be faring better. With some of it, they do the call. It's police right now. you may not know this, but in some cities like St. Louis, well, maybe just St. Louis, Kansas City, but you have to live in the city. Now, we all think of St. Louis as like Winsville to Arnold, right? The actual city is a very small geographic footprint. It's very hard to find housing. It's very hard to find a good school in the city. If you make a cop salary, especially a starting cop or something like that, it's not anything to do with the city. It's just the geographic footprint of that city is very, very, very small. Whereas Kansas City stretches out over like four counties. The geographic footprint of the city of Kansas City is huge. So they wanted to remove this residency requirement for a while. They're down 150 cops, something to that effect. And obviously this would help because you can live where you want to live. You can find a cheaper, bigger home, a school is, you can grow up near your family or whatever. You're going to have, it's going to be easier to find cops if the residency requirement's lifted. So that was the big thing. There was other stuff. I mean, honestly, I'm not a pro on what, you know, most of that stuff did. So I wouldn't be the person to tell you, but my observation of it was, I don't think any of it was particularly major. Nobody took it as that big a deal. Senate comes through, passes a bill, the House is having a hearing. The governor expands the call to include Kim Gardner. Now in this, the speaker put his foot down, which used to happen, didn't happen so much anymore. Speaker put his foot down and said, no, there's a juvenile part. He had some personal issue. Holly Rader, the now incoming senator of the Rules Committee that went through, had a personal issue, didn't like what they were doing, was not going to be okay with the bill, so they just put the brakes on it. I mean, so it was a little personal, but you're going to come to special sessions. That's my Harris pizza, by the way. Being quick and done and over, this special session all of a sudden is not quick, done and over. And so they break them all up. They toss the juvenile part, which I don't think anybody really cared. I didn't see the governor's people put out the juvenile part was gone. Whatever. Honestly, I think if the speaker would have told somebody he wasn't going to do that before, the Senate wouldn't have put it in their bill. But he broke the bills up, and they passed them out individually, right? And so when he put the bills out individually, you'll find this. This is going to be a theme here. The House is maligned by the Senate. They stop debate. They're looked down upon. And sometimes they do brass knuckles and just a resolution to audit Fort Knox, just goofy stuff, Sharia law, that people roll their eyes at, right? Some of that's known as House stuff. And it's known as House stuff for a reason, because sometimes the House can do things less than serious. Sometimes the Senate's like, don't do them. But a lot of times the people that are pushing some of the less serious stuff are House members. And so there's an air of superiority. Plus, they don't stop debate in the Senate. They say the House does. It's just, and you have to. It's the House is made that you have to do that. You can't have 163 people talking about something. It just would never, you'd never get anything done. The chambers are different for a reason. One clearly thinks they're superior to the other one. So, and they don't compliment the House a lot. But the way the Speaker did this was quite well received by observers, Senate folks, a lot of people. The way he broke the bills up, I think folks thought it was a better package. The juvenile thing, nobody liked anyway, so it was fine. They had more time. The Senate went right in to respect the governor. The House waited till after the primary. And honestly, I think most people think did a pretty good job and probably made a better group of bills. So the Senate takes, and they find some technical stuff, but for the most part, the Senate took the House bills and passed them that they had and sent them back over. And, residency, I think, is done. The other stuff's minor things. House is coming back for veto session in 2 weeks. So it'll all work out. Everything's fine, right? Every thumbs up for all around. However, the problem then lies with the governor's call. The House did not act on the governor's call to put Kim Gardner in. They did nothing with it. The Senate comes in. Now, I don't know this. Now, you'll have people that'll tell you they've talked to folks and they haven't. I don't know if the speaker's ever promised, or the floor leader. Matter of fact, the floor leader's made some statements that were discussed in the Senate last night. They're not interested in doing this. Now, I don't know if the speaker said anything, but there were senators quoting conversations with the floor leader that he had no interest in doing this in the House, the Kim Gardner part. So the Democrats draw a line saying, now here's the thing, this leads up to this session. The Democrats have given on a clean Missouri thing that's probably going to die a death. The courts are brutalizing. They gave a huge tort reform bill to the Republicans. They felt like they had gave and gave and gave. So it comes to crime. So they give the governor almost all of the stuff that he wanted on the crime special session. And then they felt like they had been good negotiators, they'd been fair, they tried to help, even help the governor get a win. No police reforms in this, only more making things more illegal and the residency requirement. So when it came down to doing a deal, they thought they had done the deal. They thought this was done. And honestly, the way the call was done, Mike Parson's stock and trade in Jeff City is he's a straight shooter, honest, straight intentions. The way the call was done looked a little shifty. It did not look like him. Doing it after the Senate passed a bill and after the House committee met, it did not look like Mike Parson. They just didn't have the feel of it, did not feel like Mike Parson. It felt like, you know, concurrent jurisdiction is what this is called, where they give the Attorney General the chance to take over murder cases. That's a perfectly legitimate thing. It's debated, it's discussed. It's probably a pretty good idea to try, right? You didn't have to do it sideways. You could have just done it. And I think that's a recurring theme here, is it's a perfectly legitimate thing to do. It's probably a good thing for Kim Gardner, probably good thing for the city of St. Louis. The person is not good for is Eric Schmidt. I mean, you can, you know, there'll be some folks when they want to criticize Eric Schmidt, they'll maybe say he does some PR stunts, right? This is not a PR stunt. This is the most heavy thing you could do. You're taking those liberal anti-cop jurisdiction in the whole state, maybe the whole Midwest, and you're saying, I'll try the murder cases there. Now, you know, to you, General Schmidt, there's no puffy good politics in this for Eric Schmidt. I think, this is an opinion, he's from St. Louis, and he cares, and it is bad. So, back to the story. So, this comes in, the Senate comes in, and they go through the first few bills, pass them, no big deal. Residency, I know Senator Lively wanted residency through. And you could just, so they had a caucus on the day before, yesterday. Gosh, when you stay up all until 4 in the morning, your days run together. And they didn't talk about it in caucus, which is a little odd. Now, Senator Unger had made no bones about to a lot of people. He was going to offer this amendment for concurrent jurisdiction on one of these bills. I do believe he made sure that residency got through because everybody knew how important that was and how important it was to Senator Lively. He offers the amendment, and I am surprised they didn't talk about it in Congress. I'm surprised that anybody was surprised. Bob Unger has never had a problem with wanting PQs. He's never had a problem speaking his mind. And the fact that anybody thought he wasn't going to do this, I don't understand that. You have to understand, I observe the Senate, I spend a lot of time watching, talking to senators, but like, now, that's a club. That's a personal, intimate club that maybe he told somebody else something, but I was not at all shocked. I figured after they did residency, he would start offering it. And so he offered it, and there's many ways to go about the PQ business, right? Of course, the Democrats said with filibuster. Here's the thing about Bob Unger that should be, you know, he takes inquiries. He'll go on the floor and defend his bill. I like that. Some senators, they do their bill, they go to their office, and they're out. Bob Unger come out and spar with it. He doesn't just like rope-a-dope. He defends his ideas. Now, you know, he may come aggressive about it, but I respect the fact that he got an idea he defends it. I also respect this Eric's pizza here. So, he only for about 5 hours of this. Doug Lively, I think like most senators, could have done this, could have not, didn't care. Right? Probably marginally for it. So, Dave Schatz, the leader of the Senate, one of the most respected people I've seen there. Dave Schatz, impugning his motives, questioning his integrity. Might get you beat up over there, but it's going to get you laughed at. David Schatz is one of the most honorable, good dudes you're ever going to run into. I never saw Dave Schatz as just like, oh my God, we have to do this. The governor had kind of got there, right? The governor was now, okay, we have to pass this Kim Gardner stuff. The attorney general has been saying it for a long time. He was there pretty much at the start of last session. I think the governor was kind of like, okay, fine, that's good, we'll do that. If you can pass it, I'll sign it, no problem, we'll carry it off. He, in the special session now, has gotten engaged, and he's calling senators. He's pushing. He's doing, and look, when Mike Parson calls you, you know, you listen. He's not a guy that you don't like working with. He's not a guy that's ever lied to you. He's not a guy that's ever done you dirty. Most senators want a relationship with a governor that actually treats them professionally with respect. So he gets in, and the best lobbying always, and the best lobbying on this bill for sure by the governor's office, by the governor himself, and had very high level of success when he talked to people. So Dave Schatz has this filibuster's going on, right? And there's only one more bill left. So it's not like during normal session when there's other committees, there's other legislation meetings going on. Capitol's darn near empty. And look, it ain't because of COVID. It's because very few people lobby these issues. And there's nothing else going on. So the Capitol's very, very empty. So Dave Schatz has a meeting. Now, I don't know this from him, but this is my... I'll give you the... Give this time knowledge scoop, and let me paint a picture that may have happened. The two senators from the city of St. Louis are there, who, let's be honest, Carla Lane was put in an impossible spot. Impossible spot. What is she supposed to do besides have a piece of this Harris pizza? She's in an impossible place, right? Senator Sheed, she was leaving, kind of makes it a little easier, less pressure on you. Senator May has 6 more years in the Senate. They meet with Senator Schatz. I've heard this from different people. Essentially, Senator Schatz is like, okay, how do we get this to a resolution? That's his word, resolution. You're always trying to get a resolution. And they don't want to compromise at all. No compromise. We're not giving this. Which is not, when you talk about whose fault is a filibuster, I watched one filibuster I thought was the minority's fault. It was a Senator Justice did a deal with Senator Dempsey, and it was on some abortion thing. Senator Dempsey killed some bill, a normal legislative deal. You kill one bill, you let one bill pass, the abortion bill passes, the governor makes a veto, everybody knew, the Senate's going to override it, the House overrides it. Senator Justice filibustered that. I think most folks did not think that was her. She had many fine days in the Missouri Senate. I don't know many folks that thought that was one of them. A deal is a deal, not a deal until veto session. But in this situation, whose fault is PQ? Well, normally the majorities in this one probably still, but there's some extenuating circumstances, right? So they go in and they talk, have a meeting, and in that meeting, they have no compromise. And then, frankly, I think some folks that have talked to them feel like they don't see the problem. And now I'm a guest in St. Louis when I'm there. But I think the general consensus in the Missouri legislature is that there is a murder problem in the city of St. Louis. And not addressing that wasn't real. Then I've heard from sources in St. Louis that the circuit attorney spoke to Senator Schatz. And I think that call went really bad. I think that this is an opinion. I think that she did not see a problem, did not want to negotiate, did not want help, maybe. I think that call went bad. And now here's the way this breaks down, right? You got to have 18 signatures for a PQ. You have to have 5 to move it forward. Ron Richard changed that rule. Not rule, but he changed the procedure. He said he would not take up PQs without 18 signatures. If you saw the thing I put online, that's what the senator signed. The signatures, you have to work to get to 18 of those to shut off debate. Now, this is something that is viewed very poorly. It is something the House does. It is something that real senators do not do. It is not a way to make any friends in Missouri by PQing things. It is thought on as weak and not senatorial by any stretch. And you may wonder where I got my ideas on this. I can give you 2 people who I formed my ideas on this on. One of them is the sitting governor, and one of them is the sitting attorney general. They view that they have some knowledge of what this is. But you'll see people want to blame them. Now, do I think the governor and the attorney general could have reached out more to Senator May? Yeah, probably so. I think there might be something to that. I know there's been some work done there, but could some personal meetings have made this easier for Senator Schatz? Maybe, yeah. I think there's you never know, but I think that's probably a reasonable critique. So Senator Schatz, I think, in that meeting, probably went from, I'm for this. Everyone was for the idea. It's probably a good idea. It is a good idea to try something different, even if it's temporary, to see if they can I don't know that putting the murder, having, I think anybody you talk to would say, Eric Schmidt has a better chance, a better likelihood, his office, of prosecuting murders to a conviction than Kim Gardner does. I think most people would not argue with that. That is a dispassionate observer of the situation. I think, you know, the bill, I think, got all the Republican votes. But getting there, how they got there, you had 24 Republicans. Gary Romine was 20. No, he's now at the tax commission, so he's not there. Gary Romine didn't vote for PQs anyway. So this goes on, and frankly, some of the sparring with Senator Onder, because of the you got loud, right? There's different inquiries. There's funny ones. There's informational ones. These were hardcore. Boom. That got him some votes, some PQ votes. I know of one that I think that on the floor debate got him some PQ votes. But you had his core of hardcore people that were going to sign the PQ to get Kim Gardner, whatever the point was. Some of them just aren't really senators that anyway. So they signed this. They were all in. Like, they'll sign any PQ. They don't care. But that's not everyone, right? And so you had a few folks that, you probably had 10, 12 of those, but then you start counting backwards. So you had Gary Romine's gone, so Daniel 23. Lincoln Huff doesn't do PQs. He's a senator, he just doesn't. So now you're down to 22. Mike Searpoint, senator, doesn't do PQs. Voted for the bill, fine with the bill, I think, but doesn't do PQs. 24 is Gary Romine, 23 is up, 22 will be Searpoint. Now you're down to 21. And you can lose, you know, three more. So Senator Burnscott, not a PQ guy, down to 20. I think you're seeing some of the old Senate. I think Mike Burnscott is a student of history, and so down to 20. And then you go down to 19 when you have the question was, so 19 would have been Senator Cunningham was gone. He wasn't at the Senate that day. Now, when you have a supermajority, you know, missing was not a big deal. But now you're down to 18. And Senator Rowden doesn't do PQs. So now you're down to 7. Now you're down with Doug Leibler. It's his bill. You want to know what a senator is? It is Doug Leibler, right here. The Boot Hill Senator, December the 25th. I'm going to tell you, senators, like, get boxed on PQs for a few reasons. You have a few senators that do not want to do PQs. And you have them like, oh, well, I'm running statewide. I have to vote for this. Okay, there's some truth to that. Gotcha. You have some that's like, I'm against PQs, but on my issue is so important, it's more important than the Senate. We should solve the Senate for my thing. Doug Leibler, this is his bill. It's his bill. And senators, I'm just going to tell you, they love bills. Senators love shadow boxes. Company, the shadow box where they put the bill and the little pen, those things stay in business because of senators, right? They love them. Everyone loves them. Harold Katt, go name your historic senator who would never do a PQ. They love bills. Doug Leibler's bill. Doug Leibler won't sign the PQ because Doug Leibler's senator. That's why we grow strong and tough in the 25th. That's the Boot Hill right there. And that wouldn't even PQ his own bill. That is a senator. That is a person a lot of folks will drone on about the Senate, how they're for the Senate. You want to know who's for the Senate? Doug Leibler. He not only talks about being the Senate the way it should be, he actually doesn't. And in politics, talking and doing it, there's always some reason why it doesn't. But Doug Leibler, it was what it was. He did not. So they're at 17. Now, I don't think there was a lot of work done to just browbeat members into doing this. I don't think those aren't the members that Senator Onder probably would have a good chance of bringing in. And I don't get the sense that it was a, oh, we're going to bang on you till you do this, right? I think some of the staff folks might have, you know, worked it a little bit. But I got the Senator Schatz is going to respect the senators. So Senator Cunningham's gone. So they call Senator Cunningham. Actually, they're on the phone in caucus. The governor calls the caucus. And so he's on speakerphone in caucus, and they're talking. And again, I don't get the, I mean, the senators I just listed you are some of the most loyal allies of Mike Parson that didn't sign this PQ. Those are some of his best friends, best allies, I should say, ideologically, politically. that weren't on that beat. There wasn't a lot of twisting your arm, LBJ type stuff. And I don't know that Zinder Shaz would have done that, but I do believe after that call, he decided that he was going to be on board and went from a passive guy. And the votes you needed to get the PQ done were not going to be votes that the Senator Andre probably had the best chance at. Everybody's got a few friends that are closer. All of his close allies were already on board. There's giving the thing. I'm sorry. Senator Ivel, I think, has some heartburn about PQs, if I had to guess. I've seen him not. You have to kind of have something you think is extraordinary for Senator Ivel. And this obviously rose that occasion. But you really needed to get Whelan. You need to get Sager. Those were the type of senators you needed to bring in to get to your 18. And Senator Shotts, I believe, probably his influence didn't hurt those folks coming into the fold. I do believe there was an earlier PQ motion that Senator Sanders said on the floor. If Senator Shotts would have ordered Senator Andre's amendment out of order, then none of this would have happened. And Senator Sater made it pretty clear that outcome would not have been the worst thing in his estimation, but he signed the PQs and he'd 18. So they're in the room and they call Mike Cunningham. And they get Mike Cunningham on the phone. Now, Mike Cunningham, let's just say, is not a fan of Bob Unger. If Bob Unger were to run for governor in 2024, I don't think he could count on a vote in Webster County. Just put it in charitably. However, Mike Cunningham has a good relationship with Mike Parson. I think they might have been on the same side of the Senate primary last month. They have always been friends, right? They've been near each other. Cunningham was not, I believe, I guess he just got elected to the Senate, but it just kind of shows you what kind of politician like Cunningham and Mike Parson are, that after the full leader race, where Governor Parson now came up short, they've become friends. And as I understand it, Governor Parson helped encourage him to come back. Now, there was a thought. Senator Andre's been learning how to fly. He's got a pretty cool plane. He buzzes around the state. Buzzes around different businesses, I think, travels. But I think now he's not instrument rated yet. Instrument rated is you can fly at night. And last night, it was a little foggy. Now, sometimes it's more foggy here in the river bottom than it is anywhere else, so maybe it wasn't where. But the airport, if you come to Jeff City, it's right around the bridge. It's in the river bottom. So I don't know the details, but there was some speculation from some senators and colleagues they'd go pick him up. Well, I don't know if either Mike Cunningham didn't want that. I don't know if Bob Unger didn't want to do that or didn't feel comfortable. I really don't know. But I know there was one time they had a plan where Bob Unger would get him. Then he said he'd drive up. So now this is like 11:30 at night, right? So now the whole state senate is waiting on Mike Cunningham to come up. Now, how he got there, I don't know if he drove it or somebody driving. But I will say, if I had to guess, he came there for Mike Parson, would be my humble thought on that. And I'm sure Mike Cunningham was for this. Keep in mind, nobody had a problem with the policy. The Democrats did in the city of St. Louis. But, like, no one thought it was a terrible thing, like an awful, awful, terrible deal, except for those senators that represent that city. Most every Republican was for. I mean, I think you have to try something, right? And I think what came down to, and why Senator Shotts was willing to move forward with this, I think that he wanted a plan. He's a planner. He's a businessman. I think there wasn't a plan. And more than that, I think there was a denial of the problem. And I think something that afternoon made Senator Shotts decide, I don't think he left happy about this. I think he decided we're going to do this. And I think that was the final person that you had to have to make this work. So they go caucus, right? Senator Libla, without really telling anybody, I don't think. And Senator Libla, as you might tell from this story, makes his own mind up. Like, you either, he doesn't hold it back. It ain't like he keeps his cards. He just tells you. You don't have to guess what's on Doug Libla's mind most of the time. If you want to know what Senator Libla is thinking, you just probably need to talk to him. He'll just tell you. He only suffered any fools. He's a pretty straightforward guy. So he just kind of laid the bill over and went to his other bill. There was some issues, but it was one of those things he knew was going to get done. Got done, 2 hours. They go to caucus. They do all these things. Senator Cunningham drives up. And I'll tell you, and if you watch my Twitter, I was – making fun of the, maybe playing the bells at the chimes, what House members do. Keep in mind, all year round, House senators kind of throw shade on the House. Now they're doing House stuff. They've got their House pins on, and they're going to do a PQ, which is what? Shutting off debate, what they do in the House. Then I watched, and if you're a person who might think of the Senate like I do, I mean, and keep in mind, by now, there's the new television reporter with Fox 2, and Cameron with us is the only reporters there. Everybody else, no one else is there. They're gone. They'll probably test COVID. They're never that late anyway. But I was watching in the gallery. I'm just a simple hillbilly Missourian, just came to watch the state Senate from the regular gallery chairs. No special treatment for the hillbilly. Watching. And I'm going to tell you that maybe it was too late. And keep in mind, now, this has been going on since 10 in the morning. Everyone's exhausted. It's 2, 3 a.m. It's after 2. They tried to do a deal with Senator Nishida and Senator May. Now, you know, I can understand why they don't want to do a deal, but I will tell you, that PQ did not go down while the thing was being read, they were still trying to offer things. There were still efforts being made to try to do a deal to avoid a PQ. I would say, for what it's worth, they did. You never know the whole story, right? And people's stories are going to be different. But from my observation, I don't know if it was too late to start, but they did every single thing you could do. They even come out. Now, this is when they're going to PQ it, and they put a sunset on it for 3 years. They made it, they gave them, like, what they were actually offering them to not make them PQ, they actually did. I think that was a senatorial statesman-like thing to do. And I'll tell you, I believe Dave Schatz and Caleb Broughton did everything they could do. I know Senator Cunningham, you'll notice that just because when he got here, Senator Cunningham, he was probably there 45 minutes before they went into session. Because I think Senator Cunningham said, is there any chance that you could just get this done? I believe he, like all everybody, wanted to see something happen. There wasn't a PQ, but at the end of the day, I mean, they did, and it is something that's bad. And so here's what you're thinking. I got a whole, if it wasn't tied to this mic, I would just grab one of these blue books here. If you ever on the state website, go back and look at, you want to know why you should be afraid when your senator starts doing PQs? Go grab, if you're a Republican, let's say you're a Republican, you hate Kim Gardner, and Eric Greitens never did anything to hurt anybody, he's a prince, and she's terrible, and something about George Soros and whatever. Get you a blue book and look at the 1990 state senate. There's only 34 of them. It's easy to count. Count it up. Let me just tell you, it'll be flipped. The world changes. Maybe, let's say the Republicans are right about what Clean Missouri is going to do. Draw a bunch of Democrat districts, right? Okay. They draw a bunch of Democrat districts, correct? And they start, let me tell you, back in the day, Lacey Clay and Danny Staples were in the same party, right? So they agree on, like, labor and, like, nothing. That's it. Labor and nothing. So now, today, they didn't peak it. It was hard to do things. It should be hard to change public policies. But the Republicans, they all pretty much think alike. Very similar people. They might disagree on a charter school to a regular school or a very small differences comparatively in today's supermajority than that one. But let's say the Democrats get a majority now. They don't need a supermajority. They just need a majority now. And these Democrats, what if they are Cori Bush voters? What if they defund the police? What if they're socialists? I mean, I don't know the Democrats that are elected now, but look to the future. What if they have some, what if they want to come to Barry County and start prosecuting the gun dealer for not doing all this paperwork just right? Maybe something that the local guy might not, maybe he'd handle like Sheriff Taylor back in Mayberry. Well, let's say Attorney General Peter Meredith does not decide to handle it like that and decides to start putting people in prison. Let's say he decides that you want to put an abortion clinic in, who else signed it, PQ? Let's say you want to go to Marshall, put an abortion clinic in. And the laws say you can't, and the Attorney General is supposed to enforce them, and he says, I'm not doing that. Or you put an abortion clinic in, they start breaking the law, somehow something bad happens, and he takes the case over from them and says, no, Now, I know there's some jumps in logic there. You have to pass a new law, but you know how you could pass a new law is if right now, you'd filibuster that bill, right? And kill it. You start doing PQs, you don't have that ability. So while you think the world is always going to be like it is now, and then, hey, I've been a Republican my entire life. That's outstanding. Think about, go get you that 1990 blue book and look at that roster of that state senate. Now go get you one from today. I love that J. Eshbrook started doing that again, by the way. And you might see a similarity in the numbers, and you might think, okay, damn, the world can change. Now, back then, the most radical things the Democratic Party couldn't be done because of the filibuster, because they didn't PQ. The most radical things could be done now if you start PQing. And every time, you do a PQ, it gets easier to do. It's like anything else. Nobody in that, well, maybe not more than four or five people in that room last night thought anything good had happened. Everybody thought this was a terrible price to pay. I believe Dave Shotzen today just felt like the situation was bad enough. Hundreds of people are getting killed. It was bad enough to PQ. And I think he thinks this will help. And I have to say, I don't think many, honestly, could many of you really say Eric Schmidt won't do a better job prosecuting those crimes? I don't think an honest observer would say no. Is it bad precedent for the state? Yeah, probably is. Is this, can you make the argument, this is the unique situation? Eric Schmidt feels that way. Bob Bonner felt that way. Mike Parson felt that way. Now Dave Schatz felt that way. 23 senators, or 22 senators, felt like they should vote for the bill. 18 of them felt like they should hit the Senate. The Senate could take a hit to make that happen. That sacrifice was worth it. Those are some pretty smart people. Now the House. So remember I told you before the story, the House decided to put their independence down. They decided to say, we're not doing it your way, we're not. Now, different people will say, did they tell you before? Most things, everybody kind of different story. Whatever, the fact is, they said, we're not doing it here, we're doing it our way. And actually, they did it so well, most people who they took and changed the way actually thought it was a better way. Again, very, very rare to give pretty much universal praise from the Senate to the House. That doesn't happen a lot. What does happen a lot is me eating a piece of Zimmer's pizza. That's good stuff. You know, dude's up there. You judge it, eat some of this. Hurt good. You'll love it. So, moving forward just a little bit. We talked about the speaker. So the speaker gets his bill. The way this works, there's two main things that have to happen. Three, the speaker's going to get this bill sometime today. He's going to come back. I got the sense maybe that like Thursday or something, do a technical. He'll have the bill. He could put it on the calendar. He could not. Then the floor leader could pick it up and bring it out. And then the bill sponsor would have it. And the bill sponsor then would be able to decide to move forward or not. And then they could either decide to ask for a conference or receive the differences and pass it. Now, you've got three people. The bill sponsor would probably take it for sure. The floor leader has told some folks, so that was the word last night. Some people were saying he said he's not inclined to do this. The speaker, I don't know if anybody knows what his thoughts are. I don't know that he's told people for a reason. Now, if you're him, you know there's prosecutors and judges probably that his attorney probably think, yeah, that's a bad thing. Don't start meddling here. This is not a good deal. There's one attorney, and the attorney general, he said the general of the attorneys probably thinks it's a fine idea. You might not be too happy if you don't do it. Governor wants you to do it, but I think the speaker has made it clear that's probably on the list of his concerns. I'm sure it's on it. It may not be the highest. The floor leader's made it clear that might not be on his list of concerns. I'm of the belief that I think there'll be an interesting Labor Day weekend for the speaker to think about what he's going to do. I think that there'll be some activists angry if he doesn't. There's a lot of balls up in the air. And then you think, okay, well, when we do this, we're probably going to get, there's word that could be called a COVID special session for senators so you can't sue businesses if you get COVID at their business. That could be some factors into that. That was discussed last night as to whether that was a factor in all the other comings and goings. I'll just tell you, I think if I had to bet, right, let's look at the side knowledge here. I'm betting the House does what the House always does, which is kind of do what they're told. I just precedent, if we were in Vegas, that's what the odds would lay out. Is they'll just do it. They'll take it and pass it. And keep in mind, go back to the point. All these things are being done around this public policy that is very justifiable. There's no reason for a person that's for concurrent jurisdiction not to just make their case. That it's not shady. It's not corrupt. It's not, you know, it's a very, there's a problem. This is a potential solution. You can go in the front door on this, right? So, it'll be interesting to see. I think if you look at the president, they just take it and do it. But there's been a history in this special session of them doing their own thing. So they could also change it, right? They could take the bill, pass a different, amend it, send it back. They could go to conference. I think, you know, a conference committee, the speaker could control that pretty closely. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, you're going to have every lawyer in the state now is going to be calling every prosecutor is going to be calling the state, calling him, the speaker, explaining him why this is a bad idea. My assumption is if he shows up to court for one of his clients next week, he's not going to find anybody there that's for this. I think it'll be interesting. My assumption is they do this, but there's at least a chance that he just chooses not to. And I think his members are like most of the senators. If they vote on it, they'll vote for it. But if they could choose not to vote on it, that'd be great too. Now, we'll see. My assumption is probably at the end of the day, he chooses to put it out and they choose to vote for it. And maybe, hopefully, you'll see some change in the murder rate. Anyways, I got a couple questions here. From Tammy Wallen, good afternoon, Alex. Alexander should say Holt. Pammy Wallen, which centers care about special needs children? I'm not going to say any of them don't care about special needs children. I think probably that question's a little broad, to be honest with you. If there's some specific public policy you're thinking about, that might be a question that could be answered. I mean, I think that all of them care. All the Democrats would spend more money on services, so maybe you could say, I'm not sure where we're coming from with that, but maybe that, as far as the Republicans, who takes an interest in kind of children's and family issues, wouldn't surprise me if Holly Rader didn't have a concern there that matched up. It's not something that is all the high profile or that I know a lot about. Got one more question. When was the last PQ? The last PQ was over the minimum wage. St. Louis raised their minimum wage at the city again, unilaterally. The state blocked them, and Mike Parson made it. There was only so much time left in the last day of session. And now that I think of it, Bob Onder had some PQ petitions he wanted to present. They presented the one on the minimum wage, but I don't remember who had it. Mike Parson recognized every single Democrat for three privileged motions and a roll call vote. It took 3 damn hours, and they didn't have time to do another one. And all the folks were begging him to come off. All of them were begging him to pull it off. And he went by the book as he saw it, and it took time, and they only did one PQ. And I don't recall Lieutenant Governor being too put out about his actions that day. Matter of fact, I recall him being proud, I think. Like I said, my view of the PQ, while you might think it's, if you're not, don't follow the process closely, my view was formed in large part by two people, and they were both around the Capitol, either on the phone or in person last night. They're Lieutenant Governor and the Attorney General. So thank you so much for the time. I'll be back with some show Missouri stuff. I'm going to upload a Missouri History Minute tomorrow. Thank you guys for watching. Next time we'll do it more traditional, rapid fire stuff. This I thought you might enjoy a story of what I saw in the State Senate last night. No show this week. Be back from our new time, 9 o'clock next Sunday on This Week in Missouri Politics. This pizza's great, by the way.